It's Monday, January 10, 2011. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. The news out of Tucson was absolutely horrifying. On Saturday morning, Representative Gabrielle Giffords, an Arizona Democrat, and 18 others were shot outside a Safeway food store while Representative Giffords was meeting with constituents. Six of the victims are dead. These include John M. Roll, the chief judge for the U.S. District Court for the District of Arizona, a 9-year-old girl, a 30-year-old staffer of Representative Giffords, and three others. By Saturday afternoon, it was clear that this was a premeditated massacre. A young man, 22-year-old Jared Lee Loeffner, was arrested, and immediately the conversation began nationwide as to the meaning of these events. First of all, an update on Representative Giffords. The congresswoman, who received a gunshot wound that went entirely through her brain, was responsive to doctors over the weekend, and even though she remains in critical condition in the ICU unit in a Tucson hospital, there is hope for her full recovery. However, doctors have not been very definitional about what her full recovery might mean. In the meantime, all of America began to pray for Representative Giffords, for those who are suffering the injuries of the shooting, and especially for those who are already suffering the pains of grief with loved ones who are dead. A tragedy like this brings out all the most important questions of life. Not only does it remind all of us of our mortality, it immediately reminds us of the violence that lurks within the human heart. Now, the conversation that took place nationwide immediately leapt to political issues. After all, Representative Giffords recently won, and very narrowly won, a hard-fought victory over a Republican challenger. Representative Giffords had been somewhat controversial within her district and beyond because, as a so-called Blue Dog Democrat, she had supported President Obama's health care legislation. She had also been involved in very controversial decisions and positions related to immigration. Nevertheless, as this tale continues to unfold, it appears that politics per se is not so much the issue. Now, we have to be careful here because there is no way at this point that we can know enough about the case to speak with certainty, nor can we interrogate the way we would like the internecine reaches of the human heart and mind, especially when it comes to Jared Lee Loeffner, who appears to be an extremely troubled young man, perhaps with some significant psychiatric problems, but beyond that, clearly with a grave moral defect that led him into a violent rampage, taking human lives and doing so in such a cold, callous, and premeditated fashion. Is this due, as some have claimed, to overheated political rhetoric? I think it's unlikely for several reasons. First of all, that overheated political rhetoric, as it's described, is nothing new in American politics. That answer is just too convenient. On the other hand, it's also just too easy to suggest that our political discourse has nothing to do with inciting troubled souls to this kind of very troubled and evil action. We need to remember that we are judged by the content of our speech, and when we go over the line in terms of political discourse, we may, unintentionally, at least give cover for some unhinged persons to take evil action. Now, as we look at this particular case, once again, the data is just not sufficient for us to render an adequate judgment, but we should remember that we can be embarrassed by our rhetoric, political or otherwise. Now, concerning the evil that lurks in the human heart, Christians should be the unsurprised in this case. Once something like this breaks in the news, this kind of tragedy immediately captures our attention and reaches our hearts. We need to remind ourselves and others that there is a deep evil that lurks within the human heart, one that we come to understand in biblical proportions. It is by God's restraining grace that there are not more persons who take such evil action. Right now, what we need to do is pray for the recovery of Representative Giffords. We need to pray for her husband and family members. We need to pray for those who are grieving there in Tucson and beyond. And we need to pray for our nation and our political leaders as they lead us in a time now of grief and crisis. Another very important story takes us to one of the most troubled nations of the world, and that is Sudan. Over the next few hours and days, there will be a plebiscite in southern Sudan about whether or not that region should secede from the country and establish itself as an independent republic. Now, the stakes in this case could hardly be higher. Sudan has been one of the most violent places on earth. Southern Sudan has a population that is largely Christian, as compared and contrasted to northern Sudan, the larger part of the country, which is largely Islamic. Now, one of the things we've had to face in recent years has been that there has been enormous violence and terrorism visited upon the South by the North, and especially by warlords allied with the North. This particular vote offers some real hope, but it is a thin hope. The Southern Sudan president, Salva Kiir, is now trying to lead his nation in this orderly process of a vote, indeed into becoming a nation, even though at this point it is simply a region. Meanwhile, a great deal of what's going on here has to do with President Bashir, that is Omar Hassan al-Bashir of Sudan, who would then become the president of Northern Sudan, and his response. There are all kinds of political and economic issues to be determined in this case, even if the plebiscite goes forth smoothly. Other reports coming out of the international press indicate that one of the real problems that the Southern Sudan nation would face is that it has almost no one who is prepared to take any kind of office or official responsibility. According to the United Nations, the illiteracy rate among adults is about 85%, among the highest rates of illiteracy in the world. The Southern Sudan region includes 8.26 million persons. 52% of the population is male, 48% female. That kind of lopsided population, a reversal of the way it is in most Western nations, indicates that infant mortality and the mortality of mothers is very high in this very impoverished region. We need to pray for those in Southern Sudan. We need to pray for the entire region. If this does not work, then the ramifications could be violent far beyond Sudan. If it does, then one of the major hotspots in the world will have at least moved into a more peaceful mode. We have to hope and pray for the very best. Now, there's one interesting feature of the story out of Sudan that also affects much of our conversation about Pakistan, India, Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, and beyond. As Jeffrey Gettleman of the New York Times reports, many of the national borders that have been recognized in these regions were established with the collapse of colonialism. They are artificial borders. They had very little to do with tribal or ethnic identities and everything to do with political and economic interests that existed at the time. So when you look at the nation of Sudan, now hopefully turning into two separate and peaceful nations, what we have is a return to ethnicity as the defining mark of these particular nation-states. It is probably, in the long run, a far greater basis than the artificial colonial legacy that established the old national borders. Now, what does this tell us? It tells us that national identity is not merely a political issue. It includes commonalities of language, ethnicity, and culture. And we as Christians should understand just how important those particular bonds are. I was absolutely astounded by one news story in the New York Times. It was buried at the bottom of the page, but I'm glad at least the New York Times gave this story some coverage. It's by Paul Vitello. It has to do with the headline that follows. Religious leaders call for new efforts to lower the city's chilling abortion rate. Now, what might you think the abortion rate in New York City would be? Well, I think this will shock you. It's described here as a chilling abortion rate. It is fully 41% of all pregnancies. That's right. At present, 4 out of 10 of all pregnancies that take place within the region of New York City are terminated by abortion. I found that absolutely shocking, but here is a statistic that takes it even further. The abortion rate among African Americans in New York is nearly 60%. Now, you look at this and you realize that there's something going on here that goes beyond all of the public rationales for abortion that you hear. All of the kinds of cases and reasonable arguments that supposedly are put forth by those arguing for abortion. Now, in any case, abortion is the unwarranted murder of an unborn human life. But you often hear those who are the proponents of abortion saying that abortions are rare, that they should be reserved for very unusual circumstances, without even arguing about the morality of those circumstances for a moment. Let's just consider this, an abortion rate of 41%. Or of 60%, has nothing to do with unusual circumstances. This is now taken to be a very usual circumstance. It tells us about the cheapening of human life, and it also tells us that the logic of abortion knows no end. Once you begin to come up with reasons to support abortion, well, just about any reason will do. That's where modern feminism has been for the last 30 years. A woman has a right to an abortion for any reason or for no reason. 41%? 60% among New York's African Americans? Just consider how little unborn human life is worth in our nation's largest city. For the better part of the last 100 years, sociologists and other intellectuals have promoted what has been called the theory of secularization. The idea is that as societies become more industrialized, more technocratic and sophisticated, there's less and less need for religion or for belief in God. Now, the idea of these sociologists and secular theorists was that secularization would lead to a truly secular public square. Now, as it turns out, secularization theory hasn't gone so well. Only the cultural and intellectual elites in the United States bear any kind of adequate description as secularized. However, one story in the New York Times indicates that they're probably not so secular as they seem. Ariel Kaminer, the city critic for the New York Times, writes a story entitled Searching for the Soul to Cleanse It. And it is a mishmash of the most confusing and, for that matter, almost caricatured New Age habits that are imaginable. This particular city critic for the paper decided to cleanse her soul, and so she hired a Kabbalah teacher. Then she hired a spiritual cleanser who led her to take deep breaths, sip holy waters that had been gathered from around the world, light a candle, and think about what she wanted to leave behind in 2010. Then, following along, she met up with someone who was known as an urban shaman. Mama Donna is the woman's name. She led her into Central Park in order to put an egg on her forehead and recite certain incomprehensible statements. As the reporter concludes, I did my spiritual cleansing on an astrologically auspicious day. Even so, and with some of the city's most celebrated spiritual guides, the stars didn't align for me. I never got that squeaky clean feeling. But as much as these women charge for expert consultations, $100 to more than $1,000, the mere fact that New York can support a blessing business is in itself cheering. In any case, I've got some unusual souvenirs, an iridescent egg, and a plastic bag full of my hopes for the new year. End quote. Just remember, nature abhors a vacuum. And this news story indicates that the human soul does as well. When you eradicate the Christian tradition from memory, when the cultural elites declare themselves sophisticated and secular, what you're left with are shamans, witch doctors, and all the rest under New Age guises coming back into the mainstream. Nature abhors a vacuum. So does the human soul. That soul will be filled with something, even if it is New Age nonsense. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. For more information, go to my website at albertmohler.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/albertmohler. I want to remind you about the Recalibrate Conference to be held on the campus of Southern Seminary February 11th through 12th of 2011. I'll be speaking along with our own Dr. Russell Moore and our special friend C.J. Mahaney. The conference aims to challenge students to live a life of humble obedience while maintaining true theology. For more information, go to our website at sbts.edu. I'll meet you again tomorrow for The Briefing.